Welcome back to the sixth episode of Loose Pool as we take a look back at the World Pool Championships and a look forward to the World Pool Masters in Gibraltar, May the 5th till the 8th. It is not long away. I'm delighted to be joined by a busy Emily Fraser. Emily, what are you doing there?
I was just reading my new book.
What page are you on?
175. 6 hours drowning maggots.
Oh, wow. I'm going to skip that page.
all I can see, it says live fishing. Barry's book launch, I think, is the official on sale date. Is Thursday next week. So lots of books in the office at the moment. But, you know, it's a great read.
I can't wait to read the book. I've got a book myself. I'm sure it's a fantastic book. But sorry, Barry. We've got to talk about pool, and we're going to talk about the recent World Pool Championships. Emily, I thought it was a fantastic event. Obviously, you're looking at it through different eyes. Tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, it was a great event, really successful. And it was just our second year of actually staging it. So second year in, and we were ready, you know, fixing things that we saw in year one, and it was just an all-round really, really fantastic event for everyone to tune into. So walking away from it, we're really pleased with the outcome of the overall event. Our first thoughts are crowds. You know, it's such a shame that the World Championship didn't have the support that it deserved. You know, we had 128 the best players there. So we should have had more people there, but I think that's something for us to learn from, possibly location. And now it's just learning, you know, is there another place in the year for the World Championship? Is there a different location for it? So again, there's just questions that we're now asking. We don't come away from an event like that and go, yeah, we'll have the same date, same venue next year. I'm sure it will sell more tickets. We have to question why we didn't. But again, the first year was behind closed doors. So it was the first real time that we managed to sell tickets to the event. So a small little speed bump, but I'm sure that next year we'll be back sort of bigger and better than ever. And what a fantastic champion that came from it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, actually, when you go away from an event like that, I mean, obviously, I've been working with you not that long, and I think for the first 2 days when I come home, I just slept. I thought, wow, that's took a lot out of me. So when you get back to the office, is that the things you're looking at? You're looking at, yeah, we could have maybe sold more tickets for the, you know, get the crowd, get the players, get the atmosphere. Is that what you're looking at?
I think we naturally do it at the event anyway. We always try to sort of debrief after an event, but we naturally do it whilst we're there because we recognize that these things are happening. And when you're there and you're in the moment, you go, oh, we could have done this, we could have done that, and you note it all down. And then when we sit down and have a real big meeting about that event, we apply all of these different elements. But the same as you, Carl, I mean, you don't work nearly half as hard as what the multi-sport team do. So they deserve a couple of days rest. So I think it's just resetting yourself. It feels like the event was years ago because we're already now into the World Cup Masters, the UK Open, the World Cup Pool, and then the 2023 calendar. So, you know, Monday morning, first thing, you're sort of back and you're ready. You've kind of forgotten about the World Championship. You're already now looking at the next events that are coming up and how to then build on the Matchroom Pool schedule for 2023. So it's relentless, but I think we notice things when we're at the event and we just try and apply it for next time, but also the next possible event. You know, we might have made a mistake that can also be applied to one of our other pool events.
Yeah, and that just throws me onto the conditions for the players. Obviously, we've got the World Masters coming up soon. We'll get to that in a minute. We know, obviously, the pockets are different to the World Championships, but there was a match at the World Pool Championships between Max Lechner and Abdullah Al-Yusuf, and you ended up moving tables. Just tell the people listening quickly what happened in that match.
Hey, you're doing this from Loose Pool. You're not doing this from your podcast thing here. You can't ask those kind of questions. He hasn't been vouched for this question. That wasn't on the running order, I don't think. No, it was, I mean, you know it yourself, Carl, because I even came to you to discuss it. It's, it was one of those situations where we noticed that obviously the table, the rack, you know, it wasn't playing how it should have been. It wasn't the right conditions for the tournament. We noticed it towards the end of the previous match. And to be honest, it was quite a rushed decision, I think, from our perspective. We decided to play on that table because obviously we've got our live stream connected to that table too. We've got our set branding. We've got, you know, our sponsors that are on that set branding, and there's lots of different decisions into that respect. And we were kind of assured that, you know, if we do this and we do that, then we won't see that nine ball creeping down to the corner pocket again. So we reluctantly went forth with the next match, which was Max and Abdullah. And we straight away, I mean, I saw it myself and I couldn't, my heart, I think, was it a golden break the first rack, wasn't it?
Yeah, first couple, it was tracking towards the corner.
Oh my gosh, it was dreadful to see. And it was one of those things where, you know, I didn't want that to happen. I didn't want them to continue on that table, but I'm not the one out there playing. It's these two players. They could have, you know, it was a situation that we needed to deal with, and we shouldn't just sit there for 9 or 11, you know, race to 9 or 11, what it was. Shouldn't be sitting there and allow for that late stage in the tournament when it's so important. Every match is important, but specifically at that time. So, sort of made the decision to speak with the players and get their thoughts on it. And, you know, like you advised, even, you know, the players are the ones that are out there. So the end of the next rack, pulled both the players aside and said, look, we've noticed there's obviously a problem with the table. All the tables, all those four tables got reclothed when we got to hand racking. So one thing we noticed before when we switched to from template rack to hand racking was where the template rack was sitting for 4 days, it started to, you know, create a mold in the cloth. And the balls, no matter how much they tried to manipulate the rack and tap it and things like that, the balls were still going to these small little molds. So we did it. When did we do it? We did it. I think we looked at reclothing it. I think we did it like the Premier League or something. And we noticed that obviously we can, it just changes it straight away. So we reclothed the tables and we straight away noticed that, you know, we could just start hand racking and making it better. So yeah, pulled both the players aside and said, look, this situation, take 5-15 minutes. We're going to try and see if we can do something. And we're going to bring the referees to come over and have a look. If we feel that, you know, nothing's changed, you guys run a few breaks. If you feel happy with it, then we'll continue the match on this table. If you don't, we'll find an alternative solution. So both players are like, yeah, we'll go away sort of thing. We've looked at the table with them, got all of the refs over to it. And they, you know, tapped a few more balls. And they said, right, okay, let's get, I think we're happy with that. But again, it's not the referees that are playing on the table, it's the players. So pulled both Max and Abdullah back and said, right, both of you break 3 times each. And they both broke 3 times each, and 2 out of 3 breaks, the 9 started dribbling again. So said, look, it's up to you guys. And Max and Abdullah both agreed. They said, well, we don't want to win the match just making the 9 on the break every time, and equally we don't want to lose the match winning the 9. So said, look, we'll move you to another table, but it's another 5-10 minutes, and it's, you know, possibly we'll lose the stream, which for us that wasn't a priority. It was the tables and the players. So they both decided and they both agreed, you know, let's move to another table. So we moved to the other one. And I just remember, and we spoke about it in the office afterwards, that everyone literally, like, all hands on deck, because it's not a case of just you're in, like, I don't know, some conference center and you can just switch and hop over to another table, like you're at the restaurant or something, and you just set it up. Like, you have to put, like, the crowd barriers around, and we had to make it look nice because then the jib camera was getting it and we wanted to make sure we featured this match. And so everyone just went hands on deck, and then we just basically stopped the main table one because we were all rattling around. And within 5 minutes and 20 people all sort of there trying to help, we moved the match over. And both players, regardless of what the outcome was, both players, you know, were so much happier about the situation that we managed to deal with it. So there's things like that that we've just never come across before. And we're learning as we're going. But I think the most important thing is, you know, the players are the ones that are out there playing. And what I've sort of been saying before is, if you've got a problem, talk to us, because we cannot resolve an issue unless we know about it or unless people constructively tell us. So we're always willing to help the playing conditions and to make them as strong, well, as tough and competitive as possible.
Yeah, and obviously it was Abdullah who come through that match. He ended up getting to the semis. But how good is it for you to see the likes of Abdullah Al-Yusuf, Dimitri Yungo, Oliver Shawnaki from these different countries going deep in your tournaments?
I think it's fantastic. You know, it sparks, you know, excitement, especially from our side of things, of looking at potentially an event in Hungary, for instance, with Oliver. And it's that they're the sort of things that, when we look at like our World Cup pool, our World Pool Masters that have been running obviously for such a long time, and you look at the different countries of the players that are involved, and especially the World Pool Masters this year, all the different nations that are included, but they're done off of the rankings. So yeah, they're not just wild cards now from us saying we want someone from this country, that is all the rankings. And you can't look at any other sort of global sport where you see so many different players from so many different nationalities competing at the high level. So it's something that, you know, that we're really excited about and that we're going to expand on. And I think it's, you know, for someone like Abdullah, who wasn't even on the rankings, he wasn't even featured on it. And now all of a sudden he's actually on the 2022 rankings because of his finish at the World Championship. That's what these rankings are doing, and that's what we're sort of working on, and that's what's great for these players.
Right, we're going to get to rankings after this last question. How good was it to finally see Shane Van Boden win the only event pretty much that he's not won, when he managed to win the World Pool Championships under the Matchroom banner?
Oh, it was so good to see. And when I handed him that trophy, he said to me, he goes, I'm going to sleep with this next to my pillow for 2 months. And I was like, yeah, bullshit, you will. But I was next to him, and he said to me, he was just like, I just can't stop smiling. I'm so happy. And you could just tell that he really, really wanted that. You could tell. And, you know, to compare it to winning the US Open multiple times, that's something that's really special. And you go back to the crowd situation. It's such a shame that, you know, a fantastic event like that, and for Shane to even still feel that prestige, even when there aren't that many spectators, it just shows how much of a big event this is, and how just how much of an impact the Matchroom Pool events make on these players' careers. Because now all of a sudden, he's world number one. He's now looking at all these different entries, and everyone always goes, oh yeah, well, Shane will just naturally get into these events. But think about confidence that's now going to spark for Team USA for the Moscone Cup.
Yeah, I think the way he ended up winning and the focus in the final, I could see it in his face. I just have a sneaky feeling come the Moscone Cup, he's going to be a different animal in that team. And, you know, because over the years, he has looked a little bit shaky in certain, you know, circumstances within the team, but I just think he's going to bring something different this year to the team.
Well, especially winning against someone like Albin, who, you know, has been kind of winning everything recently. That's a huge boost of confidence. I mean, Shane texted me, I think it was this morning or last night, and he messaged just asking questions about the UK Open. And he's like, how many tickets have you sold? I was like, sorry. He's like,
I thought he was going to say, can I get in Fisher Mania?
No. It's like, you know, how many tickets sold? And he's just like, what's the atmosphere going to be like? And I said, you know, we've already sold more tickets than we did for the World Championship, which means that possibly we found a really good venue with the UK Open, and it's a new event, it's a different style. And he said, I'm really excited. He's like, I'm really looking forward to it. And he does have that attitude at our events, but maybe he's not very vocal, or you don't really see that. So I do feel it sparked a bit of confidence in him. Which is so nice to see, because you do feel for Shane a little bit when it comes to the world, like the Moscone Cups, because the whole team is sitting on his shoulders. And that's why it's good that you see like a Skylar Woodward coming in, who now shares that major responsibility. So I just hope that Shane just looks at this year now as like the world number one, and he's like, just relaxed. He's won a world championship. And now what, he's relaxed a little bit, he's going to feel a lot more confident going into these things. And we might start seeing quite a regular pattern here.
Yeah, you just said, obviously, Shane's number one on both rankings, right? Yeah. It can be a little bit confusing for the fans and myself at the minute, and probably you guys. Just give us a little insight into the rankings, because we've got the 22 rankings that were started at the beginning of the year that was formed by a committee, and we've got a live ranking, haven't we?
Correct. I feel like I need like a whiteboard to like write it out. No, look, the beginning of the year, we launched the 2020. It's going to be really hard. It's got my braces in, so if I lisp a lot. 2022, we launched our nine ball rankings.
Yep.
So because of the year that we had in 2021, because of the pandemic, we couldn't follow a live rankings from that schedule in 2021, because the only events that took place were the Matchroom events. So it would have been unfair to present and to launch January with a schedule of events from the year before when it was only Matchroom events. So it would have been us kind of manipulating the rankings, which effectively this top 32 that we actually launched in January, what we did was we tried to look at 2021, but we also tried to look at events prior to the pandemic to ensure that players who weren't traveling due to the travel restrictions were also honored within the rankings, because now we're seeing, you know, the Copen, the Coe brothers are now traveling to our events and they're able to. So ensuring that they were in our January rankings ensured that they can now participate despite the year before. So this January 2022 rankings got set up and it went to loads of different people in the industry for their opinions. You know, do we have the number one right? Do we have, you know, the main structure of it? You're never always going to get it totally right across 20 different people, but we felt confident with what we published. Now, we set up a small committee who we feel in the industry have an unbiased view towards, because you can't have a player on this committee, to the rankings. And following huge results that have happened this year, we adjust the rankings to follow that. So we've amended our 2022 rankings to follow the results that have happened at the World Championship, because it was such a big event. So now Shane is world number one.
Yep.
And for instance, you know, Catchy has dropped down a few spots because, you know, you're seeing the likes of Oliver Sivnocki jump up a few because, you know, he's getting deep in these tournaments. You're also seeing the likes of Thorsten Homan, who, you know, he's playing, and he also had a deep run at the World Pool Championship. He's now recognised within that top 32. So we did a few tweaks and we basically came up with anyone who reached the quarterfinals at the World Championship should be in our rankings, in our, you know, 2022 rankings, because those are the ones that are used for the World Pool Masters, the World Cup of Pool, you know, these events leading up to the Moscone Cup. So alongside that is the live 2023 rankings, which is the schedule of events that's happening this year. They are the actual, so there's two sets of rankings. So for instance, Francisco, he was sat at the top of the rankings when he won the Derby City nine ball event. Now Francisco has jumped up a few spaces because he's been, because of that win that he had. Carlo Biardo, he won the US Open Championship last year, and he was ranked, I think, number three on our January rankings, and he's moved down one because, again, he's withdrawing from our events, didn't participate in the World Championship, and also Shane's now number one. So, you know, we didn't want to change the whole thing, but also, you know, this set of rankings is being used for players to gain entry into our event. So it's we should be fair to this. And someone like Dimitri Jungo, who is also, you know, getting deep into these tournaments, should be recognised and therefore having access to the Whirlpool Masters. So, you know, this is only going to last for a year, this weird kind of 2022 ranking, because as soon as we hit into next year, the live rankings will just do it themselves. But the reason why it's confusing right now is because we had to launch it somehow. So we've got two lists of rankings that are being used, the 2022 and then the 2023 that comes into play next year. But it's also our guide. I mean, we literally sit here when we're looking at the World Cup of Pool, we're looking at the World Pool Masters. These are the rankings. You know, they sit here in the office. Everyone's got a copy at their desk because everyone's seeing who's up there and how everyone's playing. So it's interesting.
Right. So what we can get from that is, if you still haven't got a clue about the rankings, let's just simplify it and say things are still early. It will evolve. Obviously, over the next sort of 12 months, like Emily just said, the live ranking will take shape. But at the minute, SVB is the number one, and he will be at the World Pool Masters, of course. He's won it twice before. Let's get on to the World Pool Masters. 20 players invited off the ranking. Is it the top 20?
Top 20 off the rankings, correct. They had entry into the event. If someone declined, it was the next person on the list. So then we have four wildcards.
Not just yet.
Am I not allowed to say yet?
You can in a minute. Let's just keep the suspense there. Obviously, we've got the Taiwanese players back. We played in the World Pool Championship, so we know some of them are going to be in the Masters. It's going to be good to see Dennis Orcolo back in the Masters. He's playing, right?
Yes, Dennis Orcolo, he's in.
Right, Emily, four wild cards. Who's the first one?
Carl Boys.
No, joke, not yet.
No. So we've got Dimitri Jungo.
Dimitri Jungo.
Wildcard number one. Wildcard number two, Abdullah Al-Youssef, which is going to be, I mean, now all of a sudden we've got two players from Kuwait in the Whirlpool Masters. Third wildcard is Lo Ho Sum from Hong Kong. Just quite an impressive performance at the World Championship, and also trying to sign up to the UK Open, trying to play in all the Open events. So it's great to have him representing in the Whirlpool Masters. And the final, Niels Fyhn.
Niels Fyhn, two-time World Pool Masters champion, is back, and I caught up with him a little bit earlier. Welcome to Pool Royalty. Too many titles to name, so we're just going to say European pool legend, Niels Fyhn. Niels, how are you?
What's up, Carl? How are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad to see you've got all your logos.
Yeah, I just had enough time to smack them on when Matt was texting me to do the interview. So I was running in here and I just put them on.
You look like a Formula One driver, not a pool player.
Yeah, well, that's where we got to go, right? In that direction. So I think I got pole position in that department today.
Well, this is what happens when you've won the World Pool Masters twice. You're a former World Nine Ball champion. Niels, you are back in this year's World Pool Masters. How does it feel?
Yeah, good. It was a bit of a surprise because I played good at the World Championships, but I didn't get deep enough where I thought I had a chance. And actually, we had Dutch Championships this weekend, qualifier, and then the finals, the final eight during the World Pool Masters. So I was booking my trip for that one, and then the invite came in. So I was surprised. I was of course happy, and you know, I've been playing pretty good the last 2 months. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, obviously, when you've won it twice, you deserve an invite back. And the last time you won, it was quite an emotional win, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was right after the injury. That was pretty hectic winter I should say, because I had to stop playing for a good 10 weeks to fully recover from the tennis elbow injury I was suffering. And I wasn't allowed to hit a ball till like right before. And it was borderline where I was about to send a text to Matchroom where I was going to pull out. And then I got the green light from my physio. She said, okay, you can go ahead and play 20 minutes. So I was like, okay, 20 minutes. And that was a week before the event. So I got 20 minutes. The next day I could do 30, then 40. And then I was allowed to do a break, which really hurt in the beginning.
Okay.
So I had zero form. I had zero expectations. But when I got there, and I remember playing actually you in the semis, my man. And the thing was, that was the first match or the first moment where I was totally pain-free. And it was like the change just flew off. It was so much energy going through me at that moment. I didn't care if I was going to lose or win. I just wanted to play, you know? So I was like a little kid again. And when you get in that mode, it's like it's a win-win. So won that semis and then I played pretty good. Won the finals. It was just, it was amazing memories. I think it was one of the biggest wins, like emotionally in my career. Yeah.
Well, at least I had a part to play in that. I was actually, I remember I was 4-0 up on you as well.
I think it was, wasn't it 3-0? Was it? No, 3-0. Yeah, 3-0. You started really well. You had a chance. You missed an 8 to go 4-0. I remember that. I'm going to rub that one in.
Yeah. That's a long day. So I've got a problem with 8 balls.
Yeah.
In the Masters. Yeah.
In the
Niels,
Masters.
What would it win to you to win it for a third time?
Oh, it would be amazing. I mean, you know, it's one of those tournaments where if you look at it, like back then, all you had to do was win 4 matches and you win the whole thing. But you got to beat 4 of the toughest guys on the planet. Now I have to win 5. You know, I'm just going to take it 1 match at a time. If I catch some groove, if I catch form, I mean, I'm playing good enough to still win. So, you know, I don't think anybody's a hot favorite. Tough format, winner breaks. It would feel amazing to win it 3 times. I think Ralph won it 6 times. That's like unbelievable.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It would be a good line to see how many guys have actually won it more than twice. I don't think there's many that's won it 3 times. It would be a nice group to join.
Yeah, obviously yourself has won it twice. Shane's won it twice. Shane's obviously the current world champ, so he's up for it. Quick word on 4-inch pockets. I know it's going to be 4-inch pockets again like it was last year. What's your thoughts on that? You've been around pool a long time. You know all about pocket size. What's your views on that?
What table are we playing on?
Rasson.
So same as last year. Yeah, I think it was good. It was really tough. And because the heat is on with the short race, you saw like surprising misses. The players are under pressure right out of the gate. And you have to take care of your position play more than with looser pockets. Like what you saw at the World Championships, those pockets were good, but still very forgiving. Yeah. So you could still see like very like easy play. And I think you're going to see more surprises again in the Masters with just crazy misses. Might get in under like a player's skin. When the pocket gets tight, so you got to mentally prepare. Like the center is still the center, so just aim for the middle of the hole and you shouldn't have a problem. But
yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy out of the gate, that's for sure.
And where do you feel like your game is at? I mean, I'm not saying you've been struggling, but some people in the media have said, oh, he's not been quite himself the last couple of years. Obviously, we know we've had COVID. Where do you feel like your game is at right now?
Yeah, I think during COVID, I was struggling. I mean, it was a period where, you know, you're playing a bit and then you're taking off for like 4 or 5 weeks because there's just nothing to do. And then you got to pick it up. And that's really hard, you know, that picking your game back up and getting motivated. Then, you know, we started back out with a Championship League pool. That was great.
Yeah.
But I wasn't still really playing good. But to be honest, my motivation at that time wasn't also at its peak. And this year I said, you know what, we had European Championships 2 months ago. And I said, I want to go there and I really, really want to get a gold medal. And I got bronze. I backed it up with another bronze. Then 8-ball didn't go so well. And we had one discipline to go, which was 9-ball. And I said, I'm going to give it everything I have. And I got the gold medal in 9-ball. Yep. So there was bronze, bronze, gold. And I felt I was playing good in Vegas. World champ. I mean, my game was good. I mean, I didn't get to the quarters or the semis in those, but I feel my game's better than like last year or the year before.
Yeah, and we know obviously you're one of Poole's hardest working professionals. We can see the table behind you. So we're gonna let you get back to practicing.
No.
Walter, and best of luck.
All right, buddy. Take care.
See you, Niels. So Niels Fyhren, that was a good chat with Niels. Emily, Niels, he's a little bit shocked to get the invite. What do you make of that?
Shocked? Why?
Well, obviously, he's probably thinking maybe there's other players that deserve it more at this current time. I don't know. Obviously, he's won it twice before.
Listen, you can't write Niels Fyhren off. We did hold our four wild cards back slightly. We had a few snooker players that were interested in playing in the event, which was quite funny. But look, we can't, like I said, you can't write Niels off. We wanted to see what happened at the World Championship. And I think that's the beauty of the wild cards. You know, you come off the top 20 of the rankings at that time of invite, but there may have been someone that comes through the ranks, someone like Dmytro Dzungo, for instance, who doesn't always get on the radar of these particular events. This is like the lion's den of the pool tournaments. This has got to be the top 24 players in the world and on the toughest conditions as well. Got these 4-inch pockets on the Rasson table, one table, all cameras, all eyes are on that match, and it's you and one other player. It's tough in relation to these open fielded events, and it's got to be the best of the best. And yeah, Niels has won it before. Niels is, he's, you know, he turns down punditry role with us because he wants to be practicing his game. He's eyeing up the Moscone Cup. He's playing these events, and he's a top player. So he should be in this category of the Lions Den for sure. So you kind of look at this and you go, you know, who's going to, there's no easy matches here, which that is what the Whirlpool Masters should be.
Yeah, it's one of the best tournaments on the calendar, without a doubt. And obviously, it's good to see O'Neill's back. And also, Abdullah Al Youssef, he had a phenomenal run. He's there. Loho Sum. How are they going to play there? They've got a bit of experience now in the actual main arena. We know, obviously, the World Pool Championships is a multi-table arena, but they've played on that main table. So I think that's going to stand them in good stead for the Masters.
Yeah, I agree. And I think even at the World Championship, we were trying to give, you know, some of the women competitors time on the TV table because they sometimes don't always get that in relation to obviously anyone else who's participating. And, you know, when I spoke to Pia after her match with Mario, she said, you know, I got pumped sort of thing, but I was on the TV table and it gave me really good experience. And so that is the sort of experience we should be giving these players. And like you said, you know, Abdullah's had that at the World Championship and he's now going to be taking that coming into the Whirlpool Masters. But he's got someone like Omar Al-Shaheen, who is, we all know, is a fantastic player. Didn't do very well at the Premier League pool recently, but I think people were just, you know, coming back into the swing of things. And it was just, it's just a case of they'll be practicing sort of thing and coming into this event. So he'll be able to speak to Omar probably about the conditions a little bit more. And I just think it's quite exciting to just see some of these players to come and experience these events.
Quick question. I've noticed there's no females. Obviously, lately, we've seen some females getting wildcards into events. How come we're not going to see any of the ladies at the Whirlpool Masters?
I think we go back to, again, the Whirlpool Masters being, you know, the Dragon's Den sort of thing. And it's, these wild cards are there to, you know, to promote the game and obviously to bring in players that we think may not get in off of the rankings. We naturally had Kelly Fisher as, you know, ranked as number 40 for our January 22 rankings. However, we can't ignore results. What needs to happen is we need to start seeing the women competitors come into the open fielded events, participate, play against the men, and earn their right into events like the Whirlpool Masters. Because what could happen is you could put someone like Christina or Veronica, who did, you know, Christina played great at the Whirlpool Championship on the TV table. She held her own. She did end up losing that match. Veronica didn't have too much of a good performance at the World Championship. But we could put them into a Whirlpool Masters field and shatter their confidence. And that's not something that we should be doing. So all I urge is that these ladies go out there, they come and play in the UK Open events, which they are asking to be playing into. They play in the UK Open, they play in the US Open. We'll give them the opportunity to be on the TV tables or the live stream tables to then set them up to win at these events. So it's a stepping stone and it's a slow process, but you know, we can't ignore it's results now. Everything has got to be transparent and everything's, you know, rankings. And yeah, we have those wild cards there, but that's why they're promoters' picks.
Yeah, and I think that's a very clear message to all the pool players. I think it's a good thing. Now we're going to end on a very, very good note. It's competition time. So if you're not going to Gibraltar, which is obviously the World Pool Masters, the 5th till the 8th of May, if you're not going, why are you not going for a start? It's a beautiful place to go. Everything's close by, the venue, everything. So get your tickets. But if you're not, it's competition time. Two tickets to either the UK Open, which is the 17th to the 22nd of May, or if you're in America, you can choose your two tickets for the US Open, which is the 10th till the 15th of October at Harrah's Resort. Awesome venue last year. I'm going to give you an easy question, not for you, Emily. This is for the fans listening. Who is the current World Pool Masters champion? Get your question, get your answers in to pool@matchroom.com. Emily, I'm sure you know the answer, but you're going to be there. You don't need tickets. In the front row.
I think I know someone who could get me in.
Right, I think that's a wrap. Next time you see us, get on all the social pages, Matchroom Pool, Facebook, Instagram, all that, YouTube channel, plenty
TikTok.
More stuff. TikTok. Oh, TikTok. Yeah. Me and Emily will do some dances on TikTok, so follow TikTok. And we'll see you at the next event, the World Pool Masters, 5th to the 8th of May. Emily, it was a pleasure.
I wish I could say the same.